Hey everyone, I'm Jason, the creator of the Army Showcase, and if you're a Tyranid player for Warhammer 40,000, you might have felt a bit shafted on the recent Planet Strike releases. They look great, but they're all Imperium. Well, I'm here to help you out as we take extruded polystyrene and turn it into a Tyranid Hive Cluster on this episode of the Tabletop Battlefield! Welcome back to Season 3 of the Tabletop Battlefield, the official podcast of the Army Showcase over at www.tabletopbattlefield.com. And sitting in front of me is the completed Tyranid Hive Cluster. What I really want to do this episode is basically take some of the basic techniques and ideas and tools and processes I've learned in terms of extruded polystyrene modeling and show them off to you and kind of show you how you can do some of the basic steps. So I want to try to find a really simple basic project to do, and I guess with Planet Strike coming out, and there's some cool pictures of Tyranid terrain in the book, but there isn't any Tyranid terrain out there for you guys, so I thought, well, let's see what I can do. Last episode, I actually showed off where I was using balsa wood to build these things, and you might be able to make that work, but it's flimsy and it takes forever. The extruded polystyrene is much simpler, much cleaner, and you can do a little bit more kind of modeling and shaping with it. Fortunately, this episode is not about paint tutorial, because I'm not going to lie, I got a bit of an ugly paint coat on it, and actually as I'm doing this, the paint is not even dry yet. So, it's not about the painting, we're going to show you about the construction. So, let's just go ahead, let's get started, and take a look at what items you're going to need to build the Tyranid Hive Cluster. Now, let's go over the materials that you're going to need in order to build the Tyranid Hive Cluster. The primary material is 1-inch thick extruded polystyrene. It's this big pink sheet stuff. We've used it before, back in episodes like 11 and 12 to build a new battlefield. Same stuff, I had a leftover, I'm going to use it to build the main body of the Hive Cluster. You're going to need some kind of modeling putty, or in this case, I'm just using general painting caulking. Just make sure whatever type you buy, you can actually paint over it. That's why I said there's like a paint caulking. But of course, if you want to get more fancy, you could use green stuff. They need really a lot of it. You could use some other types of modeling putty. It's all for just filling gaps in when the thing gets assembled. Other tools, you need a Sharpie for drawing on the extruded polystyrene. Scissors, a couple different types for cutting on paper and other assorted items. Of course, white glue to glue everything together. Then you're going to need plaster. So now this is not just a yogurt container I'm using to hold the plaster. There's actually plaster in here. We're going to use that to kind of make the soupy stuff in the middle of the Hive Cluster. Of course, things that mix paint and plaster. Just a little tray and a knife here. You may want to consider using an actual real putty knife when it comes to spreading the caulking or whatever you want to use. I know I have one of those. I've used them before. But while I was kind of rooting through my stuff in the top shelf, I knocked off two sharp objects and almost hit me. So I figured, well, let's stop while I'm ahead and just go ahead and use a basic plastic knife. Tape's not a bad thing to have around when you get to some of the painting if you want relatively smooth lines. Plastic cutters, I really don't know why these are sitting here, they just are. A hobby knife. Once again, I don't remember if I actually used these things, but it was just sitting here. And that's something I don't need right now. And also, yeah, sure, coupon for free Skittles or Starburst. And last thing you need is a couple of push pins. Your little typical kind of push pins you would use to stick things into some kind of poster board. So with that, that's all you need to actually build the Hive Cluster, so let's get started. The first step is to build a bunch of templates. These little templates form the shapes of the three main spires you're going to have coming up. To do these, we're going to jump over to my computer and I'm show you how you can use the GIMP, which is a free open source software to make some templates. Now the first step to really building the Tyranid Hive Cluster is that we actually want to go ahead and build the spires. Now each spire is going to be built out of 6 pieces of extruded polystyrene. The idea here is that we're going to create a template that we can then trace onto the extruded polystyrene and cut out using a hot wire foam cutter. And that's what we're doing here is we're creating the template. The program you see in front of you is called the GIMP. It's a free open source program. You can go ahead and get it over at www.gimp.org. That's GIMP.org. It's a very powerful open source image editor. So what we're going to do here is start with creating a template. So we want to go up to File, New, create a new image. And we're going to make an image that's 3 inches by 3 inches. So choose inches from the drop-down box and set the width and height to 3 inches. Hit OK. Now you can see I got my new blank image here.
I'm just going to zoom in on it so you guys can see it a lot better. So we're going to start with first and make some guidelines to define kind of how the outside shape is going to be. We're going to have an outside edge to our spire and an inside edge. The outside edge is going to be wider. The inside edge is going to be narrower. So throughout the build construction, I'm going to refer to the outside edge and inside edge in that fashion. So let's start by choosing a color. So if you go over to the toolbars here on the left, or the side left, toolbars on the right side, you can see this little black and white box there. These choose colors for foreground and background. Set the foreground color to say something really distinct, like a bright green color, for example. So that way it'll be easy later on to go in and remove these guidelines. We're going to start by making a narrow rectangle that basically it's maybe a little over an inch wide, but it's close to all 3 inches of the height. And the width of this rectangle is going to determine how narrow the inside part of the spire is going to be. Now, I should say one thing. I'm going to make a fairly simple template here. If you want to get more adventurous, you can go ahead and do something crazy. But this is the first time working with extruded polystyrene, and I recommend just keeping something simple so you understand the basics. So I'll have the selection put down here, and you want to go to Edit, Stroke Selection, and let's choose 2 pixels. There we go. Now we're going to determine how wide the back of the spire is going to be. Same idea, we're going to draw a rectangle starting around the 2-inch mark height-wise, and we're going to make it almost the width of the 3 inches. It's going to be a height maybe just a little bit less than an inch, and kind of line up so the bottom of its rectangle lines up at the bottom of the narrow one. That looks pretty good right there, so let's just drop it there. Go stroke selection again, and choose a line width of 2 pixels. So what you're going to end up here is you're basically going to end up, like I said, upside down T. Oops. So let's draw another rectangle and make the edges of this rectangle, the right and left sides of it, be about a half inch in from the rectangle you just drew a moment ago. And one thing you'll notice, you actually can easily resize your selection within the GIMP. As I move around to the different sizes of the selection box, you can see how I can kind of click and drag those things to resize them. There you go, that looks pretty good. And one final time, go Edit, Stroke Selection, 2-pixel line, and go. Actually, to make your life even a little bit more crazy, we're going to add a fourth box here. So start maybe around, let's say, a half inch from the top, and we'll start, looks to be about 2/3 of an inch in from the left. And draw another rectangle where the bottom of this rectangle lines up with the top of the third rectangle you just finished drawing a minute ago. And it maybe extends a little bit over about a quarter to a third of an inch out from the very tall, narrow rectangle you drew at the very start. Go ahead, let's do stroke selection. And that should give us just about everything we want to do. So now we're going to go ahead and start actually drawing the template itself. Like I said, these are all just guidelines to give us an idea of what we're going to be doing. So let's go back to your color selector, and let's choose black. And we're going to go to the pencil tool here. And let's choose a circle brush that's around, we'll do 3 pixels. And the first things we're going to do is we're going to give each of the 4 corners a little bit of a rectangular slant. And the areas in the middle are going to be curved. So, let's start at the top here. If you go to, the upper left corner of the very, very narrow rectangle, just click the mouse and put a black dot there. Then holding down the shift key so you can start to draw a line. Draw a line to the upper left-hand corner of that 4th box you drew. And then click, and now you see it draws a line between those 2 points. Repeat that line drawing process between the right side, upper right corner of the narrow box, and upper right corner of the 4th box you drew. There we go. And now we're going to go down and do the bottom corners. So now you've got 4 black lines here. They're going to form the 4 corners of your template. So the last tool we're going to use to give a little bit of a curved surface to this template is what's called the Beazer curve. Where you can find it is in the toolbox here. There's something called Path Tools. Click on that. And here's how you're going to do it. Make sure edit mode is in design. This is kind of a tricky little tool to get to use. So let's start in the upper left-hand corner of the template and choose the top point of the black line on the left-hand side. Click the mouse, hold it down, and drag it out. What you're going to start to see is there's going to be two like handles coming out. You're going to see they're dashed with little circles on the end. These are going to be determine how angled your curve is going to be. So just drag it out a little ways, and then now click the mouse button and hold it down again. And you're going to see now you've got a little bit of a curved line going there. And now as you drag the mouse cursor now, we're still holding it down, you're going to see you can change the shape of the curve between those two points. Release it, and then once you got a curve that looks satisfactory, and then go choose Edit, Stroke Path, choose a line width of 2 pixels, hit Stroke, and now you've got a nice solid black line that connects those two points that's curved. And you can repeat the same process with the all 4 sides of the template. So find your starting point, hold down the mouse cursor, drag out these little dashed lines, and I should say after you place down both points, you can go back and change the angles and distance of these lines if you don't like how it turns out. And then go ahead, release the mouse cursor, go to your endpoint, hold down the mouse button, and drag it out till you get a curve that you like. So you can do it just like that. Go Edit, Stroke Path, 2 pixel line width, hit Stroke, and you're good to go. Let's just do this quickly for the last two. Oh, and what I should say is between curves, what you got to do is select a different tool, so say the Color Picker tool, and then click the Path tool, and you'll go back and start a new path. There's probably an easier way to do that, but I don't know how to do it. Now, the last thing we want to do is remove all the guidelines. So what we want to do is use the Select by Color tool. It looks like a little kind of finger pointing at a red, blue, and green square. Click that. Then click on the bright, anywhere in the bright green. First, make sure if you go to the Tools section over here, go down towards the bottom, you'll see a section labeled Threshold. Make sure that the threshold is set to probably less than 10, or 10 or less. And then click anywhere in the green. And it's now going to select all the green color without selecting any of the black color. If it does select some of the black color, your threshold is too high. To put it at 10 or less, you should be fine. Just go hit Control and X if you're on a PC. Otherwise, on a Mac, it's probably the Command button and X to do a cut, or just do Edit Cut. There you go. Guidelines are now all gone. Now, each spire, like I said, is made of 6 of these templates. So what we're going to do is now going to do a new document. Go File, New. And this time, let's make it a width of 7 inches and a height of 10 inches. This new document is a little bit smaller than a full-size sheet of paper. And what you're going to end up doing, you're going to go back to your single template, do Select All, Control Copy, or Control C, or Command C, and go Edit, Paste. And you're going to see now you've got your template here in the middle of the page. You want to hold down the mouse button and click on it and drag it to the upper left-hand corner. Now we're going to make 5 more copies of this. Each one's going to be a little bit smaller than the previous one. So go Layer, Anchor Layer. Now let's go Control V or Command V and paste it down and put it a little bit below it. What we're going to do is before you choose Layer, Anchor Layer, choose Layer, Scale Layer. Let's go down and choose a width and height of this new one to be 2.75. And now as I hit scale, it's a little bit smaller than the one above it. Now I'll go layer, anchor layer. Do it again. Paste it down. Go layer, scale layer. Let's make this one be 2.5, and then there you go. Paste, it'll go layer, anchor layer. Let's paste the fourth one down. Layer, scale layer. Let's go down to 2.1. So we're starting to get quite a bit smaller now. layer, anchor layer, paste it down. Let's go layer, scale layer. Let's go down to 1.8. And these sizes I'm scaling to are relatively arbitrary, so you can choose to do whatever scale you want. If you want to have more than 6 of these, you're more than welcome to. It's just what I chose for my project. So layer, scale layer, and the last one, let's make it 1.5. Now we've got all 6 copies of the template ready to go. We're going to go ahead, you want to print out 3 copies of this, and then we're going to go ahead, jump back over to our extruded polystyrene, and go from there.
Now take your sets of cutout templates here. Just do a quick count and make sure you've got all 18 of them. Of course, you should have 3 sets of 6. Now bring out your large sheet of extruded polystyrene. Just kind of set it down on your table. And what you're going to want to do is start taking your push pins. I'm just watching, there's a storm coming in really quick here. I'm going to try to do this quickly. So start taking your push pins, and using 1 per template should be enough, but I guess if you want to keep everything sliding around, you can use 2 per template. It really isn't going to matter too much. Just go ahead, lay down the various templates, and use the push pins, and stick them down to the extruded polystyrene. Alright, I just finished putting down all the templates on the extruded polystyrene. Next step is simple, straightforward. Take your Sharpie or a permanent marker or whatever you're using. Go ahead and trace them out. Alright, now there's 2 last things you want to do before you take this thing outside and start cutting things up. One is you actually want to make 1 additional tracing of each of the 3 top pieces, the 3 smallest ones. These are going to be actually end up becoming the claws on top of each of the 3 spires. Oh, and the very last item you're going to need for this build project, before I forget about it, because I probably will forget about it later in the episode, is you want to get a hot iron foam cutter. You know, I've used them before. Just you plug the things in, they're a little raw, it gets really hot, and you kind of cut right smoothly through the foam. There we go. Let's take these off. And then the final step that you're going to do, just to keep yourself from going crazy later once you've got these things cut out and lots of little pieces everywhere, you want to label all these things before you cut them out. So I'm going to label them A, B, and C for each of the spires, and then 1 to 7 for each of the 7 pieces. 1's the biggest, 7's the smallest. Alright, they're all labeled. Take out your hot wire foam cutter, take this thing outside, get your proper breathing protection on, if you got it hopefully, and go ahead and cut these things out. We'll be back in just a minute to show you what the next step is. We're back inside and I've got all 21 pieces cut out. I've actually got them in 6 different stacks here. I've got 3 stacks that contain the bottom 5 pieces of each spire. And for sanity's sake, I've got the numbers on the bottom. I'll explain why I did that in just a moment. And then I've got the top 2 of each stack just kind of sitting off by itself, because we're not going to work with those for a while. Our next obvious step now is to actually get the kind of angular shape that each of the spires have. They kind of lean inward. They kind of tilt inward. Because right now, depending on how you cut the polystyrene, they're probably relatively straight. I mean, mine got a little bit of lean to them because I was kind of cutting them in a hurry because the storm was moving in and then like a struck of lightning, that kind of thing. But you want them actually to have a curve to it, not just a lean. I mean, granted, if you guys have a little bit of lean, a little bit of a twist, I wouldn't worry about it. The organic spires are not necessarily perfect. So to accomplish this effect, what we're going to do is with each of the 5 bottom pieces, we're actually going to cut a little bit off the top. And we're going to cut the top off at an angle. So starting at the back of the spire, which in my case is the wider part of the spire, you're going to start draw a little line from the upper, basically back corner, to maybe about 1/8 to 1/4 inch from the top of the front of the spire, if that makes sense. Basically, you're drawing a diagonal line from the back corner to the front, where it ends a little bit below the top of the spire in the front. The idea then is you're going to cut along this line and basically give the, I guess, give the top of each of the pieces of the spire a little bit of an angle to it. So therefore, as you stack them up, the angle becomes cumulative and it basically curves in more and more as you get higher and higher. That is one reason why we're having the lettering. Actually, that's the number one reason why we're having the lettering on the bottom. Therefore, you cut the tops off without cutting off the lettering, so you still know which piece goes to which spire and in what order. It's easy to tell that way. So to do this, basically start with the bottom one. You really, it doesn't matter, but you go ahead and start with the bottom one. Take your Sharpie, and you're going to start at the top back corner and just, as best you can, kind of estimate an angle line so that when the line touches the front of the spire, it's maybe about an eighth of an inch to a quarter of an inch from the top. Just do that on all the levels of the bottom five pieces of each spire. Take it outside, cut that off, and we'll come back in and proceed to the next step. Now I'm back inside one more time. Just finished cutting off the angled tops of each of the bottom five sections of each spire. So now I've actually got the pieces all separated into three piles. Each of these three piles has the bottom six pieces of each spire. The top seven pieces sitting off the side, so I'm going to do a little bit of work with them before I'm going to glue them on. Now at this point, we're going to start gluing the spires together. And what you want to do is start with the bottom piece of each spire and place it face down. And face down would mean that the lettering is facing down. Put some white glue on the top of this piece of the spire. And then just kind of being as close as you can to lining up the fronts of the spires, the front edge of the spire. Stick the piece on top of it right above it. And repeat the process for all six pieces total. Of course, it's the bottom plus five more. And what you're going to see is you keep adding each piece. Not only does the spire obviously get smaller, but it's going to angle more and more inward towards what will become the center of the hive. One thing to keep in mind is that don't worry if there's little cracks and crevices in between each of the pieces. That's what the caulking's for, or the molding putty, whatever you're using, to kind of fill in those cracks. So like I said, don't worry if you can see visible cracks right now between the pieces. You're going to worry about cleaning that up a little bit later. Just go ahead and glue the three spires together, and we'll come back in just a minute, and we'll show you how to start building the claws. Now we're on to the most difficult part of building a Tyranid hive. I'm going to do my best. I'm outside here, kind of next to a busy road. I'm going to do my best so you can hear me. This is the most difficult part of the build. That actually requires three different build steps, each one more precise than the previous one. Now the first one, of course, we're outside, so we're using our hot wire foam cutter. So that thing's warming up right now. So what you're going to do is take the seventh piece of each spire. Obviously the bottom is going to have the lettering on it. Stick a hobby knife in the bottom about where you expect the peak of the claw to be. And the reason you're going to do this is most of the time you're going to be supporting this piece by holding on to the hobby knife and maybe a little bit of thumb on the actual extruded polystyrene for stabilization. Now on the top part of the extruded polystyrene, you want to go ahead and put a dot about where the peak of the claw is going to be. Now one thing I should say, this actually is a relatively difficult process to get this looking really nice. It took me about three tries before I finally got a really good looking claw. So don't worry if you got to go ahead, cut some more of these pieces out and experiment some more. It's not that big a deal. Take your hot wire foam cutter, and what you're going to do is you want to do this in little, slow steps. Little because that'll give you a better smooth surface, and also slow because what you're going to find is not only does obviously slow give you more precision, but when your hot wire foam cutter kind of leaves extruded polystyrene, it's going to kind of shoot out a little bit depending on how much force you're putting on it. If you're not careful, that wire could very easily come down and hit you right in the hand and burn you. So you got to be very careful when you're doing this. Just little bits at a time, take the hot wire foam cutter and kind of cut a somewhat of a conical shape. And that you basically started to peak and slowly go further and further down. Now, keep doing this in a somewhat of a circular motion around the peak of the claw. So always start at the peak of the claw and work your way slowly outward. And what you're going to see, over time is going to start to take the appearance of something that kind of has a little bit of a conical pyramid shape to it. Like I said, this is only the first step where you get a lot of the rough shape and a lot of the large material out of the way. It's not a very precise. Don't expect to make this thing look like a claw just by using the hot wire foam cutter. That's my mistake. The first couple times I did this, ended up kind of an ugly looking thing, and it was like, really? So just keep that in mind as you're doing this. It's only the first step in the process. You may need to, as the process goes on, to actually go ahead, take out the hobby knife, and reinsert it in a different spot, because you know, over time, as you put more force on the claws, you cut with the hot wire foam cutter, it's going to kind of wiggle the knife free a little bit. Don't worry too much about that, because like I said, this is just basic shapes you're going for right now. This is probably about the highest level of precision you're going to get with a hot wire foam cutter. I mean, maybe if you sat here for a few hours, got really, really careful, you could do it. What you're going to find as you cut smaller and smaller pieces, the foam actually starts to harden, and therefore the hot wire foam cutter can't go through the hardened foam. Like, for example, down here is where some of the hardened foam, you see it's a little bit darker pink, a little bit of brown to it. And if I try to get through that with the hot wire foam cutter, it just really won't go through it. So there is really a limit to just how much precision the hot wire foam cutter is going to get you. So let's take this guy inside, and we'll continue on with the second step using a hobby knife. Let's move on to stage two of building the claw. And here you go, I've got the piece just as it was after I kind of cut it all up using the hot wire foam cutter. Now we're going to use an X-Acto knife or a little hobby knife, whatever you want to call it. And just very carefully take little bits off. And the point here is to go from what is a relatively still blocky shape to much more of a cylindrical shape. You're not going to be looking for an exact point just quite yet. That's coming up in stage three, but this is to give the whole thing a more, like I said, more of a cylindrical shape. Still not there, but definitely is looking a lot cleaner. We're just about ready to move on to stage three. The last thing you want to do using the hobby knife is decide exactly the shape of the base as it's going to be. So just go ahead, take your hobby knife, and cut out kind of whatever the shape of the base is that you want this claw to have. There we go. I kind of reduced the size of the base down, gave it a little more of a cylindrical looking base. Now we're moving on to stage three, where we're going to use some very high grit sandpaper. In this case, I'm using 220 grit. And just basically treat this almost as like a lathe situation, where you're going to be slowly spinning the claw around and using the sandpaper to smooth down all the edges. And this is where you're going to use the sandpaper to give the thing a very nice sharp point. You'll see it doesn't take long, you'll see it very quickly start to see it form to a point and get very nice smooth cylindrical edges around the claw. So there you go, it's relatively smooth, got a relatively nice sharp point to it. The last little trick we're going to do is make these a little more exciting. I'm actually going to end up taking the sandpaper a little bit more and kind of grinding down one of the sides of the claw. This is going to actually make the claw look a little bit hooked. So I'm going to sand down one side more than I sand down the rest. Yeah, it kind of worked all right. It takes the practice, but you know, there we go. So that's now gives the claw a little bit of a hook look to it. So it's just a little bit different style. If you like that kind of thing, you can do that. Otherwise, you can pretty much call this piece of claw done. Just go ahead. Take your three claws you made and stick them one on each of the top of the three spires. Now, really the last time we're going to use the hot wire foam cutter is to build basically the base of the hive. So it's going to basically be a giant crater. So actually you can use this technique not only as the base of the hive, but if you want to build craters for your battlefield as well. What I got in front of me here is a 9-inch by 9-inch piece of extruded polystyrene that I already cut out. The size 9 inches is relatively arbitrary, it's just what I chose. If you want to make a bigger hive, go ahead and make it bigger. I wouldn't make it too much smaller than this, because if you start making it smaller than this, you're going to notice that the spires get really, really close together. Your middle acid pool isn't going to be very big, and it's going to look really cramped. So don't really go any smaller than 9 inches, but feel free to go bigger if you wish to. The first step in making the base of the hive is you need to decide where's your acid pool going to go. So go ahead and just kind of using a Sharpie marker, draw out kind of a
squiggly little circle-ish thing. This is going to represent where the acid pool is going to go. We're going to have the nice bubbling acid and all the things in the center of the hive. So there we go. You can see here now, I just got a little squiggled out Sharpie marker where the center of the hive is going to be. So now you're going to take your hot wire foam cutter, and what you're going to do is do cutting motions similar to what you did with the claw, but on a much larger scale. And what you're probably going to notice is in a lot of cases, the length of the hot wire foam cutter is basically not long enough to cover an entire diagonal or an entire angle. Don't worry about that. It's going to take multiple cuts to start removing large pieces. Continue the process, keep going around in a circle, and kind of get a little bit of slope to go into all the sides around the acid pool. Now there's two more steps to actually finishing up the base of the Tyranid hives. One is to do detail work around the edge of the pool, and the last is, of course, to cut out the pool itself. This is where you got to get careful here. So you want to kind of trace out the lines around the pool using your hot wire foam cutter as best as you possibly can. What you're going to do then is slowly move it outwards, just like that, away from the acid pool. So you cut out, maybe kind of trace out maybe an eighth of the pool at a time. And then you go ahead and just using the very tip of the hot wire foam cutter, just keep scoring into this area that you just kind of sectioned off, and piece by piece, flick it off and kind of rip it off and remove it. So I'm going to go ahead now and just kind of, using my hands, just kind of go in there and gut this piece out, make it look a little rough. And that's all you really got to do. Just do that all around the pool and get the nice shape of the pool cut out. Here we go. The acid pool is now all traced out. It's time to go ahead and cut the acid pool out. This is obviously the simplest step. Take your hot wire foam cutter, just jab it all the way through the extruded polystyrene, and follow the acid pool around the shape you cut out or you traced out. So there you go. And now this is probably a good time to mention that I actually lied a little bit earlier. When I said there's two steps, I actually meant there's three steps. The last step is, of course, if I hold this thing up here, you can see it's still pretty rectangular, which doesn't look very natural for a kind of a massive alien hive that grows out of the ground. So go ahead now and just kind of arbitrarily make the edges ruffled. You know, so take your hot wire foam cutter and just go around the whole length of this thing. As they're doing here, and just kind of draw, make the edge instead of rectangle, make it kind of curvy and a little bit of cylindrical shape to it. There we go. Now it has more of an uneven, kind of more hive looking visual to it. So we're going to go inside, and now it's time to go ahead and attach the three main spires to the base of the hive. So here we go. We got our three completed spires, all with some kind of claw on the top. They kind of vary in size and shape. Some look like Hershey Kisses. Others are tiny little baby claws, we'll call it. I guess it's still growing. Now we're going to go ahead and attach the three spires to the main hive base we cut out just a little bit ago. And what you're going to do, here's how you're going to do this. Step one is to spread the spires out about equally around the circle, so approximately one every 120 degrees. So I'm going to put one over here, and one over here. Now you don't want them touching the acid pit. You want them backed off a little bit. And then what you're going to do now is take your Sharpie marker and outline the base of the spires over, essentially outline the base of the spires over the base of the hive.
And the reason you're going to do this is because you're going to head outside in a moment, and you're going to go ahead and basically follow these lines with the hot wire foam cutter and cut them out. So that way the bases of the spires will sit nice and even with basically the base of the Tyranid acid pool here. There you go. So this is what you got ended up here. You got the Tyranid acid pool base with the three outlines of the three spire bases traced out. We've got all our components and we're ready to go ahead and assemble them. The one new thing I brought into the project was just a small square of basically cereal box. That's just a little bit bigger than the actual base of the acid pool itself. So let's go ahead and take your glue. Glue the acid base down to this piece of cardboard. And then go ahead and insert the three spires into each of the three spots you just cut out. Here we go. We got the fully assembled Tyranid Hive cluster. You got the three spires glued down. You've got the base glued down, then obviously also to the piece of cardboard. Now what you're going to want to do is once everything's dry, in terms of glue, and also in a minute here we're going to start putting on the caulking, you're going to want to go ahead, take some scissors or a hobby knife, and cut out the cardboard wherever it's not covered up by extruded polystyrene. So therefore the cardboard will eventually only go up to the very edge of the extruded polystyrene acid base. Now it's time to get out the caulking. And this is done for two reasons. One, you need to seal off the inside of the acid pool here, because that's going to be filled with some plaster, and you want to get a kind of a boiling, goopy-looking effect. And also, along the various spires, and where the spires meet the actual acid pool base, there's going to be little gaps because, it wasn't a very perfect cut or something like that. So that's what the caulk is going to run along there and kind of smooth everything out. So here we go. First step we're going to do is to actually go ahead and we're going to run some caulking along the inside of the acid pool base. There we go, it's looking pretty good. Let's just take this guy back a little bit. You can spin it around and you can see how the caulking's all right up in there along the base where the pool meets the cardboard. Now the last step we got to do in terms of using the caulking, slide him out of the way for right now. We'll bring out our mixing tray, per se, which is really, I just take this on the caulk gun, squirt some of the caulking in it, and then using the knife, I'm going to go ahead and fill in some of the various gaps that exist throughout the model. For example, right here along this part where the spire meets the base, just take some of the caulking and very carefully run it along there. I also kind of like to run along the back a little bit so you can kind of make a little bit of a just a little more smoother transition between the layers of the spires. I guess all these kind of things are your kind of choice, just how much decoration and how much repair you want to do. I mean, if you've got some really nice molding putty and know what you're doing, you could probably use it to make some really cool looking carapace armor. At the current time, that goes way beyond my skills as any kind of using any kind of molding putty, so I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to go ahead and use it mainly to fill in some of the gaps. And this part is where I'm going to cheat a little bit. Instead of sitting here and spending the next hour or so kind of filling all the little gaps with the caulking, what I'm going to do is slide this one out of the way and pull in the one that's all nice and done that I've been showing off all throughout this show. If I can get the right camera frame. Right there. I already got all the caulking done on. We're going to go ahead and move on to the next step, which is creating the acid pool. For building the acid pool, you're going to be using two different things. First, you're going to be using, I got some old flyers here. They're going to rip up and kind of toss in there. The idea is hopefully that the plaster kind of stick to this and give it the plaster a little bit of an uneven flow to it, maybe an effect of a little bit of bubbling bubbles. I'm not quite sure if it's going to work, but I'm going to try and see how it looks. Obviously, the second item then is the plaster, which I've got in this yogurt container right here. So let's start by taking some of the sheets of the old flyer, just kind of rip them up in a few strips, just like this, crinkle them up into little balls, and toss them into the acid pit. Probably unfold a little bit, but that's all right. You're trying to go for a little bit of an uneven look. Don't need many, just maybe four or five at the absolute most. Spread them out. There we go. That looks pretty good right there. And now I'm going to go ahead and mix up the plaster. Make sure you follow the safety instructions for your particular type of plaster. I can tell you right now I'm not, but... Oops. What I'm going to do is just take a little bit of plaster. Maybe a little more than just a little bit. And just add a little bit of water at a time. Not much water. Because you don't want to make sure... You want to make sure you have the right consistency. Obviously the consistency on what type of plaster you're using. You do not want to make it too liquidy. Then really bad things happen if you do that. A little bit more water. Only if you need to add more water, add only a little bit at a time. Let's go ahead just a tiny bit more. I want it to be a little runny so I can kind of pour it a little bit. Take a little bit longer to dry, but like I said, I'll be able to pour it in there. There we go. Looking pretty good for what I'm trying to do. Just go ahead and as best you can, pour it into the acid pool and let it fill up. Now on to painting the tiered hive. Now we're going to do something different than what we've done in the past. Now in previous things where we actually painted up extruded polystyrene, we usually take some white glue and just kind of water that down and spread that across the surface to kind of create fill in all the pores and make it easy to paint on. This time we're going to do something a little bit different. We're actually going to be using a different tool. We're going to use what's in this giant white bottle here. It's actually called, let's see if I pronounce this right, white gesso. Now, of course, gesso is a special type of paint. Unfortunately, it's fairly expensive. This bottle here was $23 for around 946 milliliters, do the math there. And what it is designed for is basically porous surfaces, like extruded polystyrene. It sticks really well to this kind of stuff without any kind of previous coat layer. So in a lot of ways, this kind of acts as a primer when you want to paint on something like styrofoam or some kind of extruded polystyrene, something like that. It comes in two colors, white and black. I bought white because that was what was in this bottle when I picked it up. I had no idea what color it was. Maybe the white color of the bottle should have gave it away, but it didn't. So either way, this is white. You can try to find it in black, at least in some cases. Bob Ross used to use black gesso every now and then, I believe. So it is paint. So it works just like paint. Take a little bit, squirt it into some kind of painting tray. Just take a paintbrush and paint over the surface of what you're working with. You'll notice it goes on pretty well. It probably is a little bit more runny than normal paint, but it's not really super messy kind of thing. So just paint it over the entire hive cluster and let it dry. Now, obviously, the length it's going to take to dry is going to vary in what type of gesso you buy. The particular brand I've got is Liquid Text, and it takes 24 hours to dry, it says. I mean, I think last time I played stuff, it dried quicker than that, but maybe you might just want to let it sit for 24 hours to make sure that it does have the full proper time it needs to dry. But other than that, just go ahead. Paint over the entire model, and you once it's dry, you go ahead and continue painting with normal paint. So with a really quick and very ugly paint job applied, we're going to go ahead and call this project done. But the painting was not the purpose of the show. The purpose was to kind of show you some basic ideas and tips on how you go about building models out of extruded polystyrene. Hopefully you found it helpful. If not, well, check out some of our other build shows and, of course, our other shows. We got plenty of them, a catalog going back, what, 2.5 years now or so? But either way, thanks for watching. Once again, I'm Jason. Any questions or comments or ideas for projects, send them over to my email at jason@rockosoftware.com. That's rockosoftware.com. And, of course, Twitter at @TT_Battlefield. Wow, it's kind of crazy to think we're about 2/3 of the way through this series, this season right now. It's like, wow. So, got a few more things coming up for you. Of course, we got a review of Blood Bowl, hopefully next episode. That would be my goal if I can finally get all the guys together. Arcane Legions review, not too far off once you get our hands on those figures. And then probably one more build episode for the year. As for the rest of the episodes, we've got maybe one or two different ways we're going to go. Because once winter starts, we've got a lot of time to hang out indoors and play games. So we got one of two different ways we're going to take the show, but we'll see how that turns out in the future. Enough rambling. It's been long enough. Thanks for watching. We'll see you again in about 2 weeks on the next episode of the Tabletop Battlefield.
The Tabletop Battlefield is copyright 2007-2009 by Jason Rutherford and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License.
The intro music Down With Everything is by The Transfer and is acquired from www.patefighter.com and is used in their Creative Commons license.